On today's podcast, tape 20, Ogden's Nut Gone Flake by the Small Faces.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
Root-de-doot-de-doot. We're talking about the Small Faces. Here we go. Ogden's Nut Gone Flake. recorded late 67. October 67 to March 68, released in June 1968. Just to have a little bit of a rewind to talk about what some of the other British beat bands were doing at that time. The Who had released A Quick One While He's Away. That came out in December 67, which I think is very relevant to this. And they'd also released The Who Sell Out, came out whilst the Small Faces were recording this album. And The Who started recording Tommy few months after this album came out, so Pete Townsend has acknowledged the influence of this album on Tommy. The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper also came out in 67, so that had been out for a while, for about 3 or 4 months by the time they started recording this. And the Small Faces went into the studio to record this at Olympic Studio in Barnes and Trident Studio, which is just off Dean Street in the West End of London. The Small Faces were Steve Marriott on guitars and lead vocals, Ronnie Lane on vocals as well and bass guitar, Kenny Jones on drums, Ian McClagan on keyboards. And the album famously released in a round cover based on the cover of the lid of a tobacco tin for Ogden's Nut Brown Flake. Tobacco, a lot of smoking going on by this band at this point, I think is evident. Yeah, they just changed it from Ogden's Nut Brown Flake to Ogden's Nut Gone Flake, as in my nut's gone. I've lost my head. So yes. Where the Small Faces were at this point in their career, I think is relevant as well. And yet again, as we've had quite a few times on this series, a band kind of in transition. In their sort of troubled, slightly troubled early career, they'd been managed by Don Arden, a famous almost gangster figure, certainly not afraid to use threats and violence and intimidation on people, including his
charges. Much like how we run the pod, isn't it?
Sorry?
Much like how I like to run the pod.
Exactly, yes, yeah. And they've had a reasonable amount of success like that with pop hits like Sha-La-La-La-Lee and What You're Gonna Do About It and My Mind's Eye, All or Nothing, which was number one in 66. They're great songs, I really like them, but they're not really what the band wanted to do necessarily. So that was their Decca Records period. They were going to sign with, Don Arden basically sold their contract to Brian Epstein, apparently, but Brian Epstein died before that was finalised. So they moved away from Decca and from Don Arden, but not without major impact on Steve Marriott's mental well-being, which was arguably already fairly fragile before that. He'd been a child star of the London stage as the Artful Dodger in Oliver by the great Lionel Bart. So listen out for me dropping in some references to that as we go along. So after reviewing the situation, the band became fed up of being marketed as teeny bop commercial artists, and Marriott in particular not wanting to be one boy for sale. And the Small Faces found themselves a new home at the label Immediate, which was run by Tony Calder, who's a former Beatles promotion man, and Stones manager Andrew Lou Goldham, who's featured in quite a lot of this series already as a manager and producer and all kinds of stuff. And at this new label, they were given quite a lot more artistic freedom and also quite a lot more of a budget. And Ogden's Nut Gone Flake was the first, and as it turned out, the only album they made on Immediate, and it's generally regarded as a bit of a classic. It's in Robert Dimmery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. is the only Small Faces that was album that made number one on the UK album charts, where it stayed for 6 weeks in June and July 1968. It was the sound of the summer of 68 by the sound of it. But it's definitely a sort of slightly schizophrenic game of two halves, because not only is it sort of, there's two kind of sides to it. You've got the sort of soul singer part of Steve Merritt's voice, and then the Cockney sort of barra boy. But also, like some other albums we've discussed in this podcast series, like Abbey Road and some others I can't think of right now, side two, definitely a concept album, a kind of suite of pieces of music that go together, based on, in spring 1968, the band hired a load of boats and were messing about on the River Thames, taking lots of drugs. Early 1966, the band had taken their first LSD trip. They were also doing a lot of speed, as referenced in their early 1967 hit, Here Come the Nice. And on one of these boat trips, the idea for side two came about after a rather stoned discussion between bandmates about the moon. So I'm wondering, Kicker, would you consider yourself a fan of this album?
Consider yourself? Oh, I don't know anymore. I mean, generally, I think I am, but I haven't really listened to it for a while, so it's been quite interesting going back and listening to it, you know, repeatedly. I'm certainly a fan of one side more than the other, which perhaps we'll come to.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, though, that the one thing you didn't mention in terms of the introduction was that the Immediate Records got into a bit of hot water advertising this album or promoting it. Are you aware of this, where they came up with a parody of the Lord's Prayer to introduce the album?
I did read about that, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so just in case our listeners aren't aware, this was in all sorts of newspaper articles, or adverts and so on. Small Faces, which were in the studios, Hallowed Be Thy Name, Thy Music Come, Thy Songs Be Sung, on this album as they came from your heads. We give you this day our daily bread. Give us thy album in a round cover as we give thee 37 shillings and 9 pence. Lead us into the record stores and deliver us Ogden's Nut Gone Flake. For nice is the music, the sleeve and the story, for an ever and ever, Immediate, which frankly is a bit shit.
Well, you know, amen. I mean, when you think of what John Lennon was saying and getting into trouble for around about the same period. The band knew nothing about that advert, did they? The first they knew of it was when they saw it in the press, and they weren't too happy about it by the sound.
I mean, it's not as good, not very good. I mean, it doesn't offend me, apart from the quality of it, really. the other thing I was going to say was that the Brown Flake from Liverpool. It's a Liverpool
tobacco company.
Yeah,
cool.
So there you go. But I like quite a lot of the songs. I do have a funny relationship with it, though, because there are songs on here which I really don't like, but get stuck in my head.
Yeah. Okay. So,
which I find a bit annoying.
I tell you what is interesting is what you said about the two different sides of it, because you've got the side one, which is just what you might call sort of normal songs, and side two, which is a story with a narration by the comedian Stanley Unwin, sort of at the beginning and the end. Not Spike Milligan, who was originally who they wanted, but I think it's better with Stanley Unwin. At the beginning and the end of the songs, this CD that I've got here was actually one of the first CDs I bought in the early 90s when I got a CD player, and it was certainly one of the first ones I bought which I didn't already know the album or have the album on record or tape. And part of the reason why I bought it was because of the Paul Weller influence, and I must have read somewhere that he liked it. But also, my one's got an extra track, which is a live version of Tin Soldier, which Paul Weller was covering at that time as well. But I listened to the album a lot, and I have continued to do so over the years. I do really like it. But until the last few weeks, where I've been listening to it a lot more closely, the Stanley Unwin bits have always quite annoyed me. And I've always wished they were a separate track on the CD so I could skip them a bit more easily. But then, over the last few weeks, when I've been listening to it a bit more, and I've been listening, I've actually been paying attention to what Stanley Unwin is saying. Mm. And it really has grown on me, and I like those bits a lot more than I did.
Those aren't particularly the bits that are annoying. The annoying bits for me are the over cocknification of his vocals. So, Lazy Sunday, which was a massive hit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I really don't like it, but I can't stop singing it.
It's very catchy.
It's a real earworm.
Yeah.
Real earworm. But it's annoyingly, and I don't like Renee for the same reason. And Happy Days, Toy Town. I don't know if that's my anti-Cockney stance. or what? But the songs that where he sings, as you say, in a much more soulful way, they're brilliant.
Yeah, so, they are. Yeah.
Afterglow is a fantastic song. So, Song of a Baker, that's not actually him on vocals, is it? Is that somebody else singing that?
No, I thought it was him.
Was it him? Yeah. Okay, so yeah. I really like that as well. Those are the two songs that I really like off the album.
Yeah,
and I think they'd be ruined if they were doing your knees up Mother Brown types lyrics there singing on it.
Yeah, or if Lazy Sunday, because obviously there's one, the chorus of Lazy Sunday, he doesn't really sing in the Cockney Vic bit so much. When he's going, and he kind of is singing that bit in a normal voice, and it's great. If Lazy Sunday was sung all the way through in a normal voice, without the Cockneyisms, you might like it. But
I might do, yeah. I can't get it out of my head, so I suppose it's quite effective.
It's doing your crusting. That's what you're saying. It's doing your crusting. Well, other band members, Ian McLagan and Kenny Jones, would have been with you, because I remember watching, I think it was one of those classic albums documentaries years ago, and this bit has stuck in my head as well, that where either Jones or McLagan, I can't remember which, was saying that when they were recording that album, they were not keen on that sort of new direction, the Cockneyisms, and they used to wander around singing to the same tune. They used to sing, root-dee-doot-dee-doot, what a load of bollocks, to reflect their dislike of it. They were not especially keen on the umpa-pa style of it. I don't mind it as much as you do, but I kind of think, and on Lazy Sunday in particular, it would be a better song if it was just sung with his sort of soul vocal kind of thing.
That vocal delivery inspiring Johnny Rotten. Do you buy that?
Well, I could hear that he might be. Didn't they? They used to cover What You're Gonna Do About It, didn't they? The Pistols in the early days. The Ray Reaney one, the one you were talking about before, that is a rather daft song. It's got a bit of charm. It's a sort of daft song about a dockside prostitute who actually was Kenny Jones's real-life auntie. And again, it sounds like they've stolen a few ideas, doesn't it, from musical for that song. But I suppose you've got to pick a pocket or two to make great records. And you've got to like the bit where they say groping with a stoker from the coast of Kuala Lumpur. Surely they've got to like that bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are bits that I like, but I think the thing about that song is that ultimately that's given us Blur. But I thought it was quite interesting that Small Faces gave us Blur through that, and then the Faces, you could argue, gave us Oasis.
Yeah, well, that's an argument for... Yeah, I mean, if it is responsible for Blur, then yes, I agree with you. Let's see if we could somehow go back in time. Like, let's not kill the baby Hitler. Let's make them stop them recording that, and then hopefully stop the existence of Blur. That would be great. Yeah.
Actually, the before we get into the songs themselves with a bit more detail, I do want to pick you up on your. I mean, it was very, very full of a lot of information. Your introduction and very well researched, obviously. But I'm not sure about the Small Faces. I think these are another one of those bands where it's Small Faces.
Not
definitely
this one,
the Faces, but. I think they're Small Faces, are they not?
Okay, well, I'm going on the... I've got a few CDs here. I've got my CD of Ogden's Not Gone Flake, which, of course, famously doesn't say the name of the band at all on the cover. But on the spine, no. It's definitely the Small Faces. I've got a couple of cheapo compilations here, which I love even more than I love this album, I've got to say. Best of the 60s, yes, it's Small Faces, not the Small Faces. And this one, which is called the Universal Masters Collection, classic Small Faces. Yeah, you're quite right. It's no the But let's not dwell on that, because we spent about half the Pink Floyd podcast talking about that, didn't we?
Well, the best part of it, in all sense.
What about the side two then? The Stanley Unwin, the story.
I agree that the storytelling doesn't interfere with it. I quite like it. I like the wordplay, and it's got, he's got one thing that he does, isn't he, Stanley Unwin? But he does it very well. Yeah. I quite like that. The story's a bit daft.
Would you like to explain this? Would you like to give try to summarise the story of Side Two?
Well, what's going on? Yeah, Happiness Stan, I presume is a child. I'd hope so. Otherwise, as I say, a bit of a thickie, really. But he's looking to find the missing half of the moon after looking in the sky and discovering that the moon's only half there, because obviously it's in a different phase.
Yeah.
So it's a complete misinterpretation of physics and various other things going on there. But nevertheless, fine. And then on his journey, he saves a fly from starvation by letting him share his shepherd's pie, which I thought was quite nice. And then the insect tells him that he can go and find out all about the moon and various other things from a wise man. It will also give him the philosophy of life and so on. And in order to get there, the fly turns into I think what's described as a great enormous fly follow-lopper.
Yes. Some kind of
gigantic fly. And Stan sits on the back of the fly, and they take this journey to see Mad John, who is a hermit, and I wonder whether that's John Lennon, I don't know. Anyway, Mad John points out to Happiness Stan that actually, don't be so stupid, the moon's disappearance is only temporary. And in fact, in the time it's taking you to get here, look at that, the moon's all in one piece again. And then they have a nice little song at the end. It's a bit of an annoying song, but it's... And I'm not quite sure what it's got to do with Allbrand, but there you go. Something to do with breakfast cereal at the end.
Yes, life is just a bowl of Allbrand. An interesting observation about food, glorious food there. But I quite like it. Life is just a bowl of all brand. You wake up in the morning and it's there. So live as only you can. It's all about enjoy it, because ever since you saw it, there ain't no one could take it away. On that one, I quite like the cheerful song, and it's just saying it's a fine life and seize the day and all that stuff, which I always like songs like that. But the delivery of it, I can't help being reminded of Eric Idle.
Yes.
In The End of Life of Brian, when you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle, and all that stuff. It does sound like Eric Idle, or rather Eric Idle sounds like Steve Marriott. I wonder if Eric Idle was a fan of this album.
I'm sure he's heard it.
Yeah, of course, yeah. What I do like about the second side, compared to some other sort of weird concept albums I've listened to either as part of this or just in general, is the band are rocking. Yes. With the exception of the song Mad John, which is the only song I don't particularly care for.
I like that one actually, but it isn't a rocking song. Folky, is
exactly that I find that one a bit dull. But on all the others, every other song on the side two has got at least part of it where the band are really going for it, and I love Ian McLagan's playing, I love Kenny Jones's playing in particular, I can listen to Kenny Jones drum all day.
The drumming is particularly good on a lot of this. Yeah. We mentioned Afterglow. I think the drums on Afterglow, particularly excellent.
Yeah,
Rolling Over is basically the Who, isn't it? Jimmy Hendrix Darth sound as well.
It's got some great little brass bits on it as well, there's a song on Who's Next that reminds me of that. Is it Going Mobile, I think? I'm not sure.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
What I quite like about Side 2 is the fact that they are songs. They're not just bits of songs. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 full songs on there. The best songs are on the other side, though, for me.
Go on then, hit us with your best songs.
Well, Afterglow and Song of the Baker, I think, are the two standout songs for me on this album.
I'd agree entirely.
Long Ago's and World Apart I really like as well.
Yeah, I like those two. I agree with you, absolutely. So those are my two favourites. Because it's, you know, that's the kind of hard-edged soul kind of stuff that the Small Faces are doing there. And it's more like their earlier stuff, which is to be, you know, which I prefer on the whole. Because you know that I'd do anything to hear them playing songs like those. And other songs like on this CD, like Almost Grown and Understanding and Grow Your Own and those kind of tunes. That's what I really like when they're in full-on mod mode.
I didn't realise, actually, you probably know this because you seem to sounds like you know their earlier songs a bit better, but the introductory instrumental is an instrumental version of I've Got Mine, which is a previous single. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. It's quite different. Right. I've Got Mine is on this one. It's classic Small Faces. Yeah, it's quite different. It's slightly slower, and it's...
Did you know that the strings on that, do you know who did that?
I'm going to guess. Is it John Paul Jones again?
It isn't. Oh. It's the
Not man Van Dyke from Parks.
Uncle's father.
Sorry?
It's a bit complicated, but it's the man from Uncle's father.
Who's the man from Uncle?
The man from Uncle. You know the TV show, Man from Uncle, with David McCallum.
Okay, if you say so. It's I've never
dad.
Heard of it.
It's his dad, he's on it. David McCallum Sr.
Is the string arranger.
When people have to call themselves senior and junior and all that, like Fat Frank Lampard, he's Fat Frank Lampard Junior, isn't he? So they you know, you've got less Fat Frank Lampard Senior. You can't call yourself that at the start, can you? So you're not David McCallum Senior, you're David McCallum, and then unless you've got kind of a good idea that you're going to have a child who's a boy
and has the same name,
and you're going to give him the same name, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
interesting kind of stuff. Yeah. So, I'd agree with you with "Song of the Baker" and "Afterglow of Your Love." Definitely my favourite songs. But although I do like every song on it, but not Mad John as much.
Right.
Yeah, that would be the one I would skip if I was going to skip any. Although I have listened to this album an awful lot, and I've listened to it a lot more in the last few weeks as well, and I haven't skipped any of it, or even been tempted to skip any of it.
Yeah, no, it works, doesn't it? It's definitely a strong album, and I think I like the fact that they've broken off from, you know, what they were doing before to try something different. It kind of was the end of the band, though, wasn't it? Because they didn't marry it leave to go to Humble Pie after this, and then they became the Faces with Rod Stewart.
Well, it seems it's rather a sad story, but what's his name? Pete Frampton. So Steve Marriott wanted to add... Yeah. He wanted to bring Pete Frampton into the band, and the others said no. So he kind of just left.
His face not fit.
Yeah, his face was too big. So he just Marriott just left. I think he walked out in the middle of at the end of a concert on New Year's Eve at the end of 1968, and then Frampton claims that the other members of the Faces shortly after that came round to ask to his house to ask him to join the band to replace Marriott, and he said no, because you had your chance to let me in the band with Steve and you didn't want me in the band then. The other members of the band all claim this is utter rubbish and that totally didn't happen. I've got another interesting anecdote. Do you remember a few weeks ago when I talked to you off air about this, and I said that about Steve Marriott being the Artful Dodger in the West End, and that Phil Collins, my bete noir, had also been played the Artful Dodger on the London.
And interestingly, that your Phil Collins being your bete noir is fully reciprocated by Phil Collins himself.
Good. And I said I'd read somewhere that Steve Marriott was really mean and unkind to Phil Collins. Where that was, and I tried to Google that online and try to find where it was, and I couldn't find any reference to it. But in my mind, in my imagination, I like to imagine that Steve Marriott was mean and unkind to Phil Collins. They possibly didn't even meet, because I think they were Artful Dodger at different times. But what I did find in this magazine, which is a Mojo magazine article from April 2021. This is where I read it, and I must have got these two things conflated in my head. Tony Robinson. You know Tony Robinson, the actor who plays Baldrick? Yeah. He was understudy to Steve Marriott on the West, on the London stage. And there's an article here where he's been interviewed by Simon Spence, who wrote a really good book about Steve Marriott, where he's saying about some rather unpleasant business that Steve Marriott was doing. He says that he was very hyperactive, and if he'd been at school today, he wouldn't necessarily have gone to a special school, but there would have been a teacher who would have appreciated he was showing some more signs of antisocial behaviour, and he would have even helped in a way that he wasn't back then. So even at the age of 13, Tony Robinson is picking up on some possible learning difficulties or behavioural difficulties that Steve Marriott had. I will take a photograph of that, and we can put it on the blog, because it is an interesting read, but I'm not going to read you the whole thing. But you know, he's a troubled guy. After the small faces, lots of drugs and drink, and he would tell stories through his life about what a terrible mum he'd had and how she used to make him do terrible things. And he had a pet chicken. Did you know this story about his pet chicken? He had a pet chicken, and one day his mum, Kath, killed his pet chicken and then made him pluck and eat it. He also claimed he was locked in the coal cellar for several days and that he had burned down his school when he was a kid. There seems to be some doubt of the veracity of these claims, whether they were true or not, but they were certainly things he would tell people about through his life.
That's terribly sad, really.
Yeah.
He's left a legacy of some great art, hasn't he?
He has, yes.
Before we start thinking about the ratings of the album that we might give them, a couple of things I wanted to mention, and actually referring to something again that we've talked about off air, which was that bit where at the beginning of, is it the beginning of Happiness, Stan? I think it, no, the end of. Oh, I can't remember where it comes in now, but the bit about where they go, "Hello, Mrs. Jones, how's your Burt's lumbago?"
Oh, yeah.
And you said you weren't aware of lumbago.
Until very recently. No, I thought I thought it was a skin condition.
I've got lumbago.
Oh, yeah, because then I thought, well, maybe it's a make of car. But, so, clear up for the listener, what is lumbago? It's not your car,
well,
is it?
I mean, I think generally lumbago is related to, you know, manual work, and it's lower back pain, frankly, that's what it is.
Okay.
But I suffer from it, not because I worked as a miner or anything honourable like that, but because I played too much cricket and on hard surfaces.
Well, there you go. And how is your lumbago?
So how is my lumbago?
Hello, it's Mr. Elf. How's your lumbago?
Yeah, it's can't grumble. Mustn't grumble.
Okay. All right, you sound like you're grumbling.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you... Well, you can make a decision on this. So the Hungry Intruder, which is a song halfway through on the second side, which is where Happiness Stan interacts with the fly. Now, we in the past have had a playlist that's been building of songs sung from the perspective of a fly. And I'm wondering whether this, you would say, certainly in part, this song is from the perspective of a fly, and whether it is worthy of inclusion.
I think at least some of it is from the perspective of a fly, isn't it? So, yeah, I think it should go on the list.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent. I think that brings us up to 9 songs. Somewhere on our website, should the listener be interested in songs from the perspective of flies. Of course, the wire being the starting point of that. Have a look. We'll add it to it then.
I seem to remember that when we posted that as well, we wrote to Rennie Sparks from the Handsome Family and asked her about one particular song that she'd written and said, could you confirm that this song is written from the perspective of a fly? And she wrote back to us saying, I can confirm that every one of our songs is written from the perspective of a fly.
Yes, there you go. All right, so I think we've talked probably enough about this one album. It's odd just having one album to talk about. But you've kind of said that you like everything on it, so I'm presuming you're going to give it a really high score.
I'm going to give it a pretty high score. I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10.
Okay.
Because I do like every song on it, and it's an album that I knew and liked before researching it for this podcast, so... It's an album I've owned for a long time and I've listened to a lot over the years.
Well, I don't like it quite as much as you, I don't think, because the you are more of a Cockney than me.
I am, yeah.
So that perhaps explains why. I'm going to give it six and a half, but I would say that the A side is better than the B side, and but you know, it's a good album, and it's one that you can go back to and listen to, isn't it? So it's, it's been a joy spending time with it over the last few weeks.
So an average score of seven overall, then.
Pretty
anyway,
high.
So we will be back soon with another episode, and I can assure you, listener, that Kicker knows I'll be there as long as he needs me. So where are we going for the next... Simon Garfunkel, isn't it?
We're up to tape 21, which is... It does seem that we're getting through these, aren't we?
Yeah.
But yeah, tape 21 features Simon and Garfunkel's Bookends and The Monkey's Head.
Well, those are two albums I've never heard before in my life. So obviously I've heard The Monkees and I've heard Simon and Garfunkel. I haven't been living in a cave like the hermit Mad John. So I'm aware of those artists, but I've never heard those particular albums. So I'm looking forward to it.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcast, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kicker of Elves and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.